tonight is October the 26th. Okay. And we are still in Parashas Vayishlach. And we are on page 178. We just had the meeting between Yaakov and Esav. And we talked about the wives of Yaakov and their children introducing themselves or bowing down to Esav, and then Yaakov and Esav themselves embracing. So now we have the dialogue between the two of them. So we're starting from Pasuk Ches, verse 8. So Esav is talking to Yaakov. Vayomer, and he said, Milucha kol hamachana azeh asher pagashti. Now they translate milucha, which is a funny phrase, or a difficult phrase to translate, which they translated as, what did you intend? Those words aren't in the pasuk. That's the way they're understanding what he means to say. Milucha kol hamachana azeh asher pagashti means, who is to you all of this camp that I met? Vayomer, and he said, meaning Yaakov said back to Esav, Limtzo chen b'nei Adoni, to find favor in the eyes of my master. Vayomer Esav, yeshli rav. Esav said, I have a lot. Achi, my brother, yihilacha shalach. Let it be to you what is yours. So, this gift that you sent me, remember Yaakov sent a very generous gift to Esav. So, here Esav is saying, you know, Yaakov, keep it. I don't need it. Vayomer Yaakov, and Yaakov said, Al na. No. Or, no, please, or no now. Im na matzasi chen be'enecha, if I have found favor in your eyes, v'lakachta min chasi miyadi, you shall take my gift from my hand. Ki al ken ra'isi fanecha, for an account of I've seen your face, kiros p'nei Elokim, like seeing the face of Hashem, v'atirtzeini, I should say, the face of Elokim, v'atirtzeini, and you have been pleased with me. You've accepted me.
Is that referring to the angel?
Yeah, well, that's what we'll see. That's not readily apparent, but we'll see. Kachnas birchasi asher huvaslach, take now my gift that has been brought to you. Ki chanani Elokim, for God has been gracious with me, v'chi yeshli chol, and I have all. Vayitzar bo, and he pressed him, vayikach, and he took it. He accepted it. He urged him, they translated it as, and he took it. Vayomer nisav ben eilecha ve'alchal enegdecha. So Esav said, travel and let us go, and I will go along with you. Vayomer elav, and he, Yaakov, said back to him, to Esav, Adoni yodea, my master knows, ki hayolodim rakim, that the children are weak, v'hatzam v'abakar alos aloi, and the sheep and the cattle, alos means that they're young. It just says you're nursing, right? They're nursing, and they're upon me. Udfakum yom echad, if they are pushed one day, vamesu kol hatzon, all the sheep will die. Yavona adoni lifnei avdo, let my master pass in front of his servant. Vanies nahalali iti, and I will go according to my slowness, my slow travel. Laregel hamelacha shalafanai, according to the legs or to the traveling of the work that is before me, ulerega hayoladim, and the legs of the children, ad asher avo el adoni seir, until I come to my master to seir, which was race of lift. Vayom race of Esav said, atziga na imcha mina amasher iti, let me place with you some of the nation that is with me. Let me give you some of my people. Vayomer, and Yaakov said back to him, lama zem tzachin beini adoni, why this? I should find favor in the eyes of my master. Vayashav vayomahu Esav ledarko seira, and Esav went back on that day to his way to Seir. V'Yaakov nasa sukosa, Yaakov traveled to Sukkos. Va'iva lo bayis, and he built for himself a home. Ulemikneo asa sukos, and for his cattle he made Sukkos, huts. Alkein kar Hashem amakom Sukkos, therefore he called the name of the place Sukkos. This dialogue between Yaakov and Esav is difficult to translate. It's also difficult to understand. What is the give and take? What is meant to be said by each side? The first thing I want to draw your attention to, before we get into the actual words, is notice, you know, when you have a dialogue, generally speaking, if you're reading in a book, you're reading a dialogue between two people, so the author will introduce the dialogue by saying, that Reuven said to Shimon such and such, then Shimon responded to Reuven such and such and such. At that point, the author will usually revert to pronouns. He said XYZ. He responded XYZ. He exclaimed XYZ. He was shocked. He said XYZ. You don't need to use the names once you've gotten the flow of who's talking when. So you, after you've gotten it going a little bit, then you can dispense with the use of the names and go to the pronouns. The Torah here does a strange thing. If you go back to the beginning of the dialogue, which is where we started, in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, which is the first time anybody's talking between the two of them. Well, that's not really true. Before, back in Pasuk, Hey, in verse 5, it says, we already read this last time, he lifted his eyes and he saw the women and the children. Who are these for you? Now there it's clearly Esav talking, because Esav was the subject in the previous pasuk. Now clearly Yaakov is responding. Now then the dialogue stops and we have the wives of Yaakov come and bow to Esav. Now, Pasuk Ches, it is Esav's turn to talk. But still, if I were the author, and this just goes to show why I'm clearly not the author, I would have put Esav's name in here. Because we're going to get back to the flow of who's doing the talking. But the Torah doesn't do that. It starts with just a pronoun. Vayomer, he said, what's all this camp that I have met? Vayomer, and he said, Limtzochein b'ni Adoni, to find favor in the eyes of my master. So one could argue that there's no need in Pasuk Ches to tell us the names, because we already know the flow from back in Pasuk He. But if that were so, then why in Pasuk Tes, verse 9, all of a sudden the Torah sees the need to begin to use the names again? Vayomer Esav, Yeshli Rav Achi Lecha Shalach, I have a lot, my brother have what is yours. Vayomer Yaakov says back, Alna, Imna Matzasichim Beinecha, all of a sudden, we need to know their names, where before it was obvious. Yaakov speaks for two psukim, Yod and Yod Aleph, 10 and 11. And then in 12, we're back to pronouns. Vayomer, who's talking now? Esav. It's his turn. Nisav and Elecha v'elchon and Elecha, I'll travel with you. Yod Gimel, Vayomer Elov, he said to him, two pronouns. Yaakov says back to Esav. Adoni Yodea, my master knows. He goes on to explain how he can't travel quickly, both in Yud Gimel and Yod Aleph. Again, Yaakov gets two psukim. Then, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, all of a sudden we've forgotten who's doing the talking. Vayomer Esav. We need to be told it's Esav doing the talking. Atzigana Imcha. And then in the middle of Tesvav, in the middle of 15, Vayomer Lama Zan Tzachim Bein Adoni, he said, with a pronoun, why should I find favor in the eyes of my master? So, it is curious when the Torah chooses to use the pronoun and when it chooses to be specific with the names. So I think that it's clear, and I think from the way we've just introduced it, it should be clear, that the Torah is not using the names in order to remind us who's doing the talking. Because the ping pong match is clear. He said, he said, he said, he said, he said, he said. You just go back and forth, and you can also tell from the context who's doing what, talking. There's no double talking over here. There's nobody saying two statements. The Torah has Vayomer, introduces one speech. Vayomer, the rejoinder. Vayomer, the next talk. Vayomer, the rejoinder. It's very clear from the context who's doing the talking. So then, if the Torah does not use the names to remind us who's doing the talking, if that is something which we could figure out on our own, and clearly the Torah wants us to figure out on our own in other parts of this discussion, then when does the Torah choose to use names, or why does the Torah choose to use names? What would you say?
It seems like whenever, for instance, like the first one, when Esav said, I have plenty, my brother, let what you have remain yours. It's mm-hmm. like not only he's talking to Yaakov, he's talking to eternity. It's a statement that even The Torah emphasizes this is okay, a statement that he's making.
So you're suggesting
in the temporal and intemporal.
So you're suggesting that the name is used
right.
when the statement made is a statement for all eternity, a quotable quote.
Right.
Then that's when it uses the name. When it's just relevant to this, what's going on here, so then the Torah doesn't bother using the names.
Right.
Okay, that's good for that particular one which you picked out. And perhaps it will work. It'll be a little harder to fit in some of the other ones.
But it's important.
Yes. Okay. So you're saying it's emphasizing the importance of the statement.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I'm just going to look at one thing over here before we before I accept. Okay. All right. We can go with that. That's a nice suggestion. Yes.
Well. Maybe I can check them all out, but it looks like the times where it gives the name, if one took it perhaps out of context, the statement that was made really could have been made by either one, and it might make sense.
You're saying
Esau said, "I have plenty. My brother, let what you have remain yours." Well, I could picture Yaakov saying that.
Okay. Okay, and the next statement?
Let's see.
Vayomer Yaakov.
Now that also.
Even though in context it's clearly Esav doing the talking or Yaakov doing the talking, but you're saying, but what is being said could theoretically have been the other one. Okay.
Down below, then Esav said, let me assign to you some of the people who are with me.
Okay, so you're suggesting that the name is being used because it could be confusing who's doing the talking. Where the statements that are obvious, there's no need to use the name. Okay, so the name is there to avoid confusion. Okay? Yeah.
It seems like when Yaakov calls Esau Adonai, master, maybe, and then it switches to what Esau said, so like, you know that he's really referring to Esau and not like...
Okay, so you're suggesting that the reason why it would say Esav is because since the previous statement said Adoni, my master, which we may think meant Hashem, the Torah has to tell us that no, it's really Esav he was talking to. That would explain when it says Vayomer Esav. It wouldn't explain when it says Vayomer Yaakov. Okay, but that's a suggestion that perhaps the word Esav is used when Yaakov uses the term Adoni. Which he does as well in Yud Dalet in 14. He says, Yavarna Adoni. So therefore, in Tesav in 15, again it says, Vayomer Esav. That would be consistent with your suggestion. Okay.
Maybe, I can only explain it for the top two, but maybe these are very important statements that Hashem wants us to associate one with Esav and one with Yaakov.
Okay.
Sort of
similar
thing.
Yeah. Okay, what Mrs. Jeter said. Okay. So our three basic suggestions are that when the statement is very important, and we need to be, it has the Torah's emphasizing who's doing the talking to know because it's such an important statement, that's when the name is used. Second suggestion was when we could become confused about who said what. And the third suggestion is that when it could be confusing who the previous statement was talking to, then the Torah needs to emphasize, no, it wasn't talking to Hashem, it was talking to Esau.
Could it be a reference to the time he's stamping his angel? Why does he use the word b'chassi for the matana that he gave him?
Are you answering the question of why, when it uses the pronoun, when it uses the name, or are you saying something else?
No. Could it be that some of this conversation, when it doesn't specifically with Esav and Yaakov, could it be even the son of Torah earlier when he's finding with Esav's angel?
Okay.
Because also when he says, accept my gift, he doesn't say... Matan, he says a berchatsi, like a bracha. Like at that point, you know, Yaakov justified getting the bracha from Esav. You know, he fought the angel of Esav.
Well, let's think about this for a minute. This word berchatsi. How many times is that used over here? Let's follow it through. Yaakov sent Esav a gift. What was that gift called back when Yaakov sent it? If you look back on page 172, Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, it says, "Vayalan Shambalahu." He slept there on that day. on that night, excuse me. Vayikach min haba v'yado, and he took from what came to his hand mincha le'savachiv. So it's called a mincha. A mincha is one of the terms that could mean gift. So it's called a mincha. Then the word mincha is used again in Pasuk Chaf Beis 22 on the next page. Batavar ha-mincha al-panav.
What is mincha? The same as davening?
Well, the word mincha for davening really comes from the karban mincha, from the sacrifice called a mincha. That's where it's borrowed from. And the sacrifice, the word mincha means gift. A gift to Hashem. That's what it means. So, there you have the word mincha again. Okay? That's the last reference to the gift until we come to this dialogue here. Now, in this dialogue, Esav in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, on page 178 again, uses the word machaneh, which usually means camp. Or, how do they say it over here? Let's look on the... They say camp?
Camp.
Okay, yeah. Camp. Referring to... well, we'll see what exactly what he's referring to. It's not clear if he's referring to the gift over there or not. Then Esav says in Pasuk Tes, in verse 9, I don't need this gift, you take what's yours. He doesn't say the word gift, though. That's understood. And Yaakov then says in Pasuk Yud, V'lakachta mincha si miyadi. He uses the word mincha again. So the word mincha is used. Then in Yud Aleph, he says, Kachna es bircha si. My blessing, my bracha. Switching from the word mincha to bracha. And there Esav actually accepts it. Now, if we've been learning the parshios, toldos, vayetziv, vayishlach, with any degree of concentration, then there should be bells, alarm bells, ringing in our heads right now. Is that not striking that Yaakov would use the word bracha? Isn't that what they are fighting about? Isn't that what Esav's hatred is all about? And Yaakov invokes the word bracha. Not only that, it is when he invokes the word bracha that Esav finally takes the gift. Okay, let's introduce some of the midrashim over here, and we'll try to tie some of these things together. Rashi tells us that when Esav says to Yaakov in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayomer milacha kol ha-machaneh azeh she-pagashti. He said to him, who is to you all of this machaneh, all this camp that I have met? Now Rashi says that the simple meaning is on those who brought the gift. The gift didn't come by itself. It was a bunch of animals, flock after flock after flock after flock. So there were many... those who brought the gift with them to Esav. So he was talking about, where'd you get all the, you know, all these people? Then that's what he's talking about. However, Rashi tells us, a Medrash, that Esav was actually asking about another meeting that he had, one that didn't fare so well for him. And that reads as follows. I'm going to actually read you the story out of Rashi, since it's actually a little bit lengthy. Rashi says, a Medrash, that there were Kitos, there were groups of malachim, of angels that Esav met, and they were pushing him. They were shoving him around. They were giving him a hard time. And they were pushing on Esav, they were pushing on Esav's men, and they were saying to him, who are you from? You should, if you're conjuring up in your minds, like stepping in on someone on another gang's turf, and you start shoving you around. Where are you from? What do you belong to? That's exactly what's happening over here. And the people of Esav said that these were from Esav. And then the angel said, Haku, Haku, strike them, beat him up. And then they said, leave him alone. He's the son of Yitzchak. And the angel said, Haku, Haku, beat him up, beat him up. And then they said, he's the grandson of Avram. And the angel said, Haku, Haku, beat him up, beat him up. And then they said, he's the brother of Yaakov. And they said, oh, you're the brother of Yaakov. You're one of us. Welcome. And they let him go. So Esav is asking Yaakov, what is this that I've, these people I've met, these angels that are calling this your turf? And the fact that that it was told to them that I'm Yitzchak's son didn't help. That I'm Abraham's grandson didn't help. But that I'm your brother, finally, they left me alone. Let's remember, we talked about this before, where is all this taking place?
In Mitzrayim.
They had just crossed into Eretz Yisrael. They crossed Ma'avar Yabok. They crossed the Yabok River, which, as we saw from Parashas Devarim, is the boundary between outside of Eretz Yisrael and inside Eretz Yisrael, in Eivar HaYarden. And here they were in Eretz Yisrael. So Esav, in Eretz Yisrael, has run into these angels. Where was Esav coming from when he met these angels?
The river, the other side of the river.
Well, Yaakov was coming from the other side of the river. Yaakov was coming from the northeast, from Lavan, from Haran. Where was Esav coming from?
Seir.
Okay, Seir. Seir, the mountain of Seir is his place. Where is Mount Seir?
No.
It's in the south.
South
of Eretz Yisrael. Edom is located south of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, as I've mentioned to you before, the southern part of present-day Israel is not biblically our land. The southern part of present-day Israel is really, biblically, is Edom's land. Now, it will be ours in the future, as will all the lands around there, but we never technically owned it. It was really owned by the people of Edom.
That's not clear.
Exactly where the demarcation is. That's not clear. No. Beersheba was ours. But south of Beersheba.
South
of Beersheba. The only reason why the UN gave it to us was in order to have a Red Sea port. Because we were not going to have access to the Suez Canal. So in order to...
They gave it back to Egypt anyway.
Well, we still have a Red Sea port. An Eilat. But that was the reason for it. But biblically, historically, it was never ours. So anyway, the Esav is coming from there, and now he's also in Eretz Yisrael proper. That's where he is. And the angels here seem to be telling him, this is not your place. What are you doing here? I am the son of Yitzchak. So what? I'm the grandson of Abraham. So what? I'm the brother of Yaakov. Oh, you're the brother of Yaakov. Welcome. So Esav here was surprised by this welcoming committee that roughed him up and only let him go because he is the brother of Yaakov. The next statement in Pasuk Tes, Esav says, Yesh li rav, I have much. My brother, let it be to you what is yours. So he's rejecting the gift. Yaakov then says back that if I have found favor in your eyes and you'll take my gift from me, because seeing you is like seeing the face of Elohim and you accepted me, take this gift, my gift, that has been brought to you, for Hashem has been gracious with me and I have all. And he pressed him and he took it. So a few subtleties over here. When Yaakov says, take my gift that has been brought to you, Yaakov was pointing out, this gift took a lot of effort. This gift took a great deal of effort. It wasn't like it just happened. I had to put a lot of effort into it. There was a lot of thought that went into it. Please take it. In addition, Yaakov says, Yaakov says at the end of Yod Aleph, at the end of 11, V'chi yesh li chol, I have all. Mm-hmm. Esav says in Pasuk Tes in 9, Yesh li rav, I have a lot. Chazal, our sages, point out the difference between Esav's way of speaking and Yaakov's way of speaking. You're familiar with the benching. And we say at the end of benching, we say that Hashem should give us a bracha like he was Mevarech, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Bakol, Mikol, Kol. Bakol, Mikol, Kol. Bakol is a statement about Avraham, Mikol is a statement about Yitzchak, and Kol is a statement about Yaakov. When does the Torah use Bakol for Avraham? If you look in Parshas Chaye Sarah, hold your place here, we're just going to look at this very quickly, but if you look in Parshas Chaye Sarah, on page 108, Perek Chavel, chapter 24, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. V'Avram Zaken Bob Bayomim. Avram was old, coming in days. Hashem Birach has Avram Bakol. Hashem blessed Avram with everything. That's Bakol. Where does the word Mikol, where is that used with Yitzchak? This is actually pretty ironic, but it's used in Parashas Toldos. What's that? In Parashas Toldos, on page 138, Pasuk Lamed Gimel 33, when Esav comes in to get his bracha after Yaakov has already taken it, and Yitzchak realizes that he gave it to the other son, Vayacherad Yitzchak charado gedola ad ma'od. Yitzchak had a very, very great trembling. Vayomer, and he said, Mi efohu atzad sayed. Who is the one who hunted the hunting? Vayave li, and he brought to me, Va'ochal mikol, and I ate from all. Beterem tavo, before you came, va'avarachehu, and I blessed him. Gam baruchia, he will be blessed. There's the word mikol, and the word kol associated with Yaakov is right here, when he says, Yeshli kol. I have all. So when we want Hashem to give us a bracha, we reference these three words: Bakol, Mikol, Kol. Esav says, Yeshli Rav, I have much. Chazal say, the tzaddikim recognize that what Hashem has given them is everything. They don't need more than they have. They have everything. Hashem gives what we need to have. That's what the tzaddikim realize. Hashem gives exactly what we need, no more and no less. If we need more, He'll give us more. If we need less, He'll give us less. We may think we need more. We often think we need more. But evidently Hashem doesn't agree with us. That's why He doesn't give us more. That's why the tzaddikim, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, recognize they have all that they need. In fact, this is why Yaakov went back for the pachim ketanim, for the small vessels. Again, Chazal say, why did he go back? Yaakov was a very wealthy man. Why did he go back for seemingly insignificant vessels? They are much more significant than meets the eye. That was the talk we gave Hanukkah time, which we had said we would repeat sooner or later now. So we'll get to it. Bleenetter. But they were seemingly insignificant. So why did Yaakov go back for them? Because Yaakov understood if Hashem gave it to him, it must be important. And it must be useful and needed for him. Because Hashem would not give him what he does not need. And so he went back for those small vessels. So Yaakov says, I have all. Esav says, I have much. I have rav. Chazal understand Esav's statement to be a statement of gaiva, of haughtiness. I have much more than I need. I have so much. Don't give me a gift. I don't need your gift. I have so much. I have more than I know what to do with. Don't give me your gift. I don't need a gift from you. I have more than is necessary. It's a statement of gaiva, it's a statement of haughtiness. I have so much, way more than I could possibly ever need or use. It's true that it is a haughty statement, but the truth is, it has to do with the way you view life and the way you view the world. If one views their material wealth as strictly material wealth, and there is no purpose to material wealth other than material enjoyment or pleasure, then material items can be more than one needs. How many cars does one need? 2, 3, 4, 5? How many cars can one justify saying, I need this many cars? Because this is the car that I take when I go on the highway. This is the car I take when I do my local driving. This is the car I take when I want to go for a spin. This is the car I take when I drive cross country. How many can you possibly justify?
Possessions.
Yeah, what was that?
Possessions.
Yeah, what I was talking about, you know, like
acquisitions.
No, technology. They're, you know, computers
luxuries.
And all.
Huh?
Luxuries. Oh,
gadgets.
Gadgets. Gadgets. Gadgets. That's a good word. How many gadgets can you justify? Even if you like entertainment, so you want to use this. I mean, how entertained can a person be already? When a person has a lot of money, very often the money becomes an end in and of itself because you can't justify using it all. One person in one lifetime can't use that much money. When a person reaches a certain point, there is a certain point where a person crosses a certain threshold, and then the money has to become an end in and of itself because there is no practical use for what they have. But if you recognize that what you have is not for one's personal enjoyment, it's not for one's personal pleasure, it is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then evidently if he gave me more, then he has an expectation for me to use what he has given me in his service. That's the purpose. I may not fully appreciate how each of the items he has given me is meant to be used, although Yaakov probably did. But each one of us, we may not fully understand why he gave us exactly what he gave us and how each item is meant to be used, but we can be sure that each item is meant to be used in his service. That's why he gave it to us. So Yaakov, whose view on life is that he's here to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything he has is meant to be used to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything he has is a gift from Hashem, which is only there to help him serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then he responds with kol. I have all that I need. Yet Esav, whose view on material possessions are, what can it do for me? What can I get out of the world? How much enjoyment and pleasure can I get out of the world? Then it's very difficult to justify it all. If he's very, very wealthy, it gets to a point where it's beyond any obvious use. So it's, I have more than I need. And that's how Esav says it. So, just to finish off that thought before we go further over here, when you say it in benching, what's the exact statement? When we say it in benching, we're saying, Hashem, bless us like you blessed our ancestors, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Bakol, Mikol, Kol. What we are saying is, Hashem, we want to be blessed the way Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were blessed, that you gave them, and they understood that everything was to be used in your service. We too want to have material wealth with that understanding. We don't want the material wealth for our own pleasure and enjoyment. We want the material wealth so that we can serve you, and we want to be able to serve you with all that we have. That's the way we want to have it. And that's the truth is that is a stipulation. That is a condition. Because if someone asks from Hashem for the purpose of one's own pleasure and enjoyment, then he has no reason to give it to us. Why should he? It's not to the benefit of the rest of the world, and the truth is it's not to our benefit either. Wealth for the purpose of pleasure and enjoyment destroys a person. If that's what we want it for our own good, we hope Hashem won't give it to us. Because that's not a bracha. That's a curse. But wealth for the purpose of serving Hashem, then already, that's worthwhile asking for. And that's what we're asking for in benching.
So it goes on to say,
So that book, Baruch HaShoemor, means that we should know the purpose.
It should be a complete blessing. That's right. That's right. That's right.
So, if Esau just wanted possessions for his own pleasure, right, then Yaakov must have been lying when he said that looking at Esau was looking at the face of God, like it couldn't be.
Okay. Okay. So what does he mean when he says, seeing you is like seeing the face of God?
He couldn't be telling the truth, because God doesn't acquire wealth, and he certainly... It doesn't acquire wealth for his own pleasure.
Well, more than that, what does it mean to see the face of God? Yeah. Yaakov never saw the face of God.
Yes, it did.
When?
After, at Peniel, that he saw Hashem, Panim El Panim.
Well, he says that's why he called it Peniel,
yeah,
right?
Because so
he saw. But where did he see Hashem, Panim El Panim over there? It's true. But you're on the right track. So when that's an excellent connection. The word panim over there. And what is that referring to when he saw Hashem face to face?
When he was arguing with the angel.
The angel. Okay. So this is also a reference to the angel. Now, whose angel was that?
Esav.
So what Yaakov is saying to Esav is, seeing your face is like seeing the face of Elohim. Mm-hmm.
What? How do you know it was Esav's angel?
That we know from Chazal. No, the angel, our sages tell us that is the angel of Esav that attacked him over there.
Okay.
So then what he is saying to Esav is, seeing your face is like seeing the face of Elohim. Now, what is Yaakov telling Esav? Rashi tells us in the name of Chazal, he was trying to scare Esav. He was saying, I saw the face of Hashem. Don't mess with me. Because I saw a heavenly appearance. I saw an angel. Now, that's fine and good, except that we know that Yaakov saw angels all the time. And Esav knew that Yaakov saw angels all the time. Because in the beginning of the parasha, Yaakov sent angels to Esav to find out what was going on, and they came back with the message, he's coming with 400 men. That didn't scare Esav. And here, when he met all these angels who were beating him up, so he knew that Yaakov saw angels.
Why did he just say, I saw your angel? Why?
That's what he's saying. That's exactly what he's saying. He's saying, I didn't just see any angel. It's true, I see angels all the time. I have angels who do my bidding. I'm involved with angels. So, you know, me and angels, we're tight. That's not what he was saying. That's obvious. Yaakov knew that, and Esav knew that. What Yaakov is saying to Esav is, seeing your face is like seeing the face of Elohim. Meaning, I didn't just see any angel. I saw your angel. You can't defeat me because I met your angel face to face. That scares Esav. That is terrifying. Because as we mentioned when we talked thoroughly about that battle between Yaakov and Esav's angel, the defeat of Esav's angel is a foreshadowing of the defeat of Esav himself. And we saw at the time it wasn't a clear-cut defeat. It was actually very difficult. It took the whole night. It wasn't in the end. He wasn't totally defeated. He just let him go, and in the end, he had to give up. But we talked about how in Yehoshua, when Yehoshua enters Eretz Yisrael, remember we mentioned that in order to foreshadow the defeat of the 31 kings that Yehoshua had to fight with, what did Hashem do? Now that's in the battle itself.
Yeah.
But he took the angels that represented those 31 angels, the 31 nations, and put them at the feet of Yehoshua and told him, place your foot on the heads of these angels. That would be a foreshadowing of the defeat of the people themselves, of the kings themselves. So here, Yaakov is not so subtly telling Esav, I saw your angel, and I'm here to talk about it. I survived. He was wearing a t-shirt. I survived Esav's angel.
So, apparently, Yaakov fought with Esav's angel, but Esav was not aware of that.
No, he was not aware of that until here. This is where he becomes aware.
That's right. So you can have other individuals fighting with your... with your essence somewhere, and you're not being aware of it.
Well, most of us don't deserve to have an angel that represents each one of us. Esav, who is
the angel of Israel. I was just saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Torah tells us later on with Mitzrayim, when the Jews had their backs to the Yamsuf, to the sea, and it says they turned, Vine Mitzrayim Nosea Acharehem, and they saw that, behold, Mitzrayim was traveling after them. But it says it in the singular. It doesn't say it in the plural, which, because there's a whole multitude of Egyptians running after them. So the simple meaning is, because sometimes you refer to an entire nation as a thing in the singular. Right? But Rashi tells us, again in the name of Chazal, that one of the explanations over there is that they saw the angel of the Egyptians descending from the heavens to attack them. So this is not a concept that comes up only over here. You find this all the time throughout not just Chumash but Navi also. So here Yaakov is telling Esav, I met your angel. Your face reminds me of the face of Elohim that I just dealt with. So that was a threat to Esav. That was meant to invoke fear in Esav, which it did.
Could this have a more simplistic meaning, where when you are fighting with someone and you are not in contact with them and you fear them, and then you see them and you see their face, and you can tell that you fear them for a while, but now you see that there might be a chance for peace, and that they're face to face now, and he's looking, you know, Yaakov is looking at Esav, and it's more, now that I'm seeing you, I see in your eyes that there's a chance for some type of peace.
Well,
and with peace comes a divinity. With peace comes, like, the face of Hashem, because it's Shalom.
Right. So then, the way you're reading it is then that this is a statement which is trying to create some degree of Shalom between them. So he's saying, seeing your face is like seeing a divine face.
Like, finally, we've been fighting. I'm seeing you, and I feel that, you know, you don't maybe have hatred in your face, that there might be a chance.
Right. That could be a simple meaning of the pasuk. It's a little bit difficult, as Nehemiah pointed out, because Esav was no tzaddik. But it could be it would be a statement that wouldn't be 100% truthful in order to bring about a more peaceful connection between the two of them. It's possible. That's certainly possible. It certainly could be a simple meaning in the pasuk.
So what is the connection with him using the word bracha?
Okay, so then we're going to get that. Okay. So at this point, Esav has not accepted the gift of Yaakov. Then he says, take now, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, take now the bracha, my bracha, that has been brought to you, for Hashem has been gracious with me, and I have all. And he troubled him, and he took it. In the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, when Yaakov first sends angels to Esav, back on page 170, in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, he says to them, this is what you should say to my master Esav. I have oxen, I have donkeys, I have sheep, I have slaves, and I have maids. And I've sent to tell my master to find favor in your eyes. So Rashi tells us, what is he telling Esav? He's saying, look, what is this bracha that you're so upset about? What's this blessing that you've harbored this hatred for me for 20 years? You've detested me for the past 20 years until even now you're still angry with me. So what is it all about? It's about this bracha, this blessing. What did the blessing include? Well, what the blessing was, V'itin l'cha ha'alokim, mital ha'shamayim l'shmanei ha'aretz, v'rov dagan v'sirosh, you're going to have from the dew of the heavens, and you're going to have grain and wine, oil, land, bounty. Not a word in that bracha about sheep, cattle, slaves. All these things that I have were not mentioned in the bracha of our father Yitzchak. So it hasn't come true. Don't sweat it. Yeah, he gave me the bracha, but you see it hasn't come true. I didn't get any of those things. Yes, it's true, I am wealthy. I'll grant you I'm wealthy. I have a lot of things. But what I have is not what the bracha was about. So evidently, the bracha has not come true. Don't be so upset about it. Hold the page over here on 170. We're going to come back to it. So I want to show you one other thing on 170, which we're also going to come back to here. Now turn back to 178. So Esav is still angry with Yaakov. However, in the meeting over here, as we saw last time, they did embrace, they did kiss each other, and Esav was moved to love of Yaakov, to tears, at least temporarily, because of all the times, because of all the bowing that Yaakov did to Esav. He bowed down to him. But he doesn't want to take the gift. The gift, why would Esav reject the gift? Why would he reject the gift? If he's a greedy person, which we have every reason to believe that he is, why would he reject the gift? He says, oh, I have more than I need. I don't need your gift.
He said it's not the bracha. He still wants the bracha. He said this, what he has is not the bracha.
Okay.
So he still has his eye on the bracha.
But why wouldn't he want the gift?
He wants the bracha.
He just doesn't want to be bought out.
He has plenty. He wants the bracha.
But he's being bought out.
Right?
He's being bought off.
Right.
He doesn't want to be bought off. I don't want a gift. You keep the gift. I don't want the gift.
Is because he thought it was his?
Huh?
Really? Is it because he thought it was his?
I don't think he thought it was his. I don't think that far. But he doesn't want to accept a gift. When you accept a gift from anybody, you become indebted.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to become indebted. The pasuk says in Mishlei, Sone Matanos Yichya, one who hates gifts will live. Because when you accept gifts, you become indebted. You know the oxymoron, a gift with no strings attached. There's no such thing. Every gift has a string attached. It's impossible not to have that. So here, Esav doesn't want the gift. Finally, Yaakov says to Esav, first of all, I've seen your angel, and I defeated him. He didn't say I defeated him, but if he's here to tell the tale, that means he defeated him. So first of all, Yaakov makes it clear to Esav that, give it up. You're not going to defeat me. Your angel couldn't do it. You're certainly not going to be able to do it. Then he says to him, take now my bracha that has been brought to you. For Hashem has been gracious with me, and I have all that I need. And he troubled him, and he took it. Yaakov is saying to Esav that take my bracha. Your whole anger with me is about the bracha. That's what it's all about. It's the bracha that you've been so angry about. Take my bracha. I didn't get the bracha of Yitzchak. I didn't get that. What is the gift that Yaakov sent Esav? He sent him exactly these things that he mentioned over here. He sent him
sheep,
cattle. He sent him donkeys. He sent him camels. All right, that whole list we had before. So here, Yaakov is telling Esav, take my bracha. I didn't get the bracha, the one that we're fighting with me about. Take my bracha, which are these animals. The bracha I got is not from Yitzchak. It's Ki Chanani Elokim, for God has been gracious with me. It's not because Yitzchak gave me a bracha. That didn't work anyway. I didn't get it. Evidently, I didn't deserve it because I didn't get it. Maybe you didn't get it either, but I didn't get it. So don't sweat it. Take my bracha, because this is the only bracha I have. I didn't get any other bracha. This is the bracha I got. And it's because God has been gracious with me. And I have all that I need. I don't need more than this. So then Esav takes it, because it's no longer about the bracha. What Yaakov has done is he has separated the bracha from their encounter. Don't make this about the bracha. We've been fighting for 20 years about the bracha. The bracha is non-existent. I didn't get it. This is the only bracha I have. Take it. And so Esav finally does take it. If you look again on 170,
so
you want to say something? Go ahead.
What about the first one?
If you look again on 170, when the angels come back to Yaakov, in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, Vayashuva Malachim al Yaakov Lemar, the angels return to Yaakov saying, Banu el achicha el Esav, we've come to your brother, to Esav, V'gam olech likraschav ve'arba me'oz ishimo, and he is also going to greet you, and there are 400 men with him. Rashi tells us, we've come to your brother, to Esav. That means, the gezunt, we have come to the one who you are calling your brother, but we want you to know, he's not your brother. He's Esav. You hope that he's going to act with you as your brother? That's not so. He is acting with you as Esav, the old Esav, the Esav Harasha, the evil Esav. He's got 400 men with him, ready to fight with you. He's not interested in peace. It seems to me that over here, in this dialogue, the Torah is using the terms Esav and Yaakov the same way as over there, which means as follows. I'm going to say something which is almost the opposite of what everybody said before. And that is, that when it is a statement which does not show the true colors of Esav or of Yaakov, then the Torah uses the pronoun. Vayomer, he said. But when the statement is an Esav statement, that's when the Torah uses Esav's name. When the statement is a Yaakov statement, then it uses a Yaakov's name. The first time Esav's name is used is in Pasuk Tes, is in verse 9. Vayomer Esav, yesh li rav, I have more than I need. That is an Esav statement. That's not a Yaakov statement. That's an Esav statement. That's the statement which shows us his true colors. Therefore, the term Esav is used. The next one, which is Yaakov speaking, which is really a two pasuk talk, and we could go through the entire two psukim and try to pick out which parts are the Yaakov statements, but we really only need the end of it, where he says, V'chi yesh li chol, I have all that I need, which is the contrast between Yaakov and Esav. Yesh li chol is a Yaakov statement, not an Esav statement. So here Yaakov's name is used specifically. The next verse, Nisa v'nelecha v'elcham v'negdecha, travel and let us go and I will go along with you. Obviously it's Esav speaking, but that's not an Esav statement. That doesn't show his true colors. That's just a statement he wants to go with him. And the next statement, where Yaakov refuses, that's not a Yaakov statement either. However, Pasuk Tezvah, verse 15, Vayomer Esav, atziga na imcha mina am asher iti. Esav says, let's translate it according to the, let me assign to you some of the people who are with me. And Yaakov doesn't want it. He says, why should I find favor in the eyes of my master? Why would Esav's name be used here? Is this such an Esav statement? It sounds pretty innocuous. What's the basic explanation over here? Esav has offered to walk along with Yaakov, and Yaakov says, no, I don't want to walk along with you. You know, I'm going to have to travel so slowly. I've got nursing cattle, etc. It's going to take me a long time. I've got young children. You go ahead. I'll follow along. So Esav says to him, okay, let me leave some of my men with you. Well, at least that. So Yaakov says, why should I find favor in the eyes of my master? I don't really need that. So what's the simple meaning? Why is Esav offering to leave people with Yaakov?
Maybe he doesn't trust them.
Okay, some of his spare. And what will they do with Yaakov? What's the simple meaning? Simple.
Just to spread.
You're all delving into his devious mind.
If Yaakov,
huh?
If Yaakov is indebted to him.
Okay. As protection. Let me leave some of my men with you. They'll help you out. They'll help you have a lot of work to do.
Keep their eye on him.
We'll get to that. But the simple meaning is we have two people dialoguing like this. So let me leave some of my men with you. You know, there's an army, there's a battalion, and they meet up with a slow moving caravan of civilians, and the army chief says, let me travel with you to protect you. And he says, well, I can't. I'm going to go so slowly. He says, okay, I got to go ahead, but I'll leave you some of my soldiers to help you out. They'll help. They'll protect you. They'll buy some provisions for you. You know, so that's the simple meaning of what's going on over here. But the Torah tips us off by using Esav's name that there's something much more devious going on over here, okay. And that's what you were all suggesting in your what you were saying. That Esav, when he says, let me leave some men with you, Esav is not doing this out of the goodness of his heart. Esav is doing this as Esav. I want to leave some people with you. Now, some of you said to spy. Some of you said to keep an eye on Yaakov. It seems to me that based on the following explanation of the give and take. When Esav says, let's travel together, this is, in Pasuk Yud Beis 12, do we have enough time for this? We have very little time. We're going to try to fit this in. When Esav says in 12, in Yud Beis, let's travel together, this is, that statement is a universal statement. That's a global statement. Remember, Esav, do we have time for this? We're going to whet our appetites over here. That's all we're going to be able to do over here. Remember that Yitzchak and Rivka had two different ideas of what the relationship between Yaakov and Esav would be. Remember, Yitzchak's mistake was because he was never told the prophecy that Yaakov and Esav will never work together. Yitzchak's approach was correct based on pure logic, without any nevuah. And Hashem didn't want Yitzchak to know the truth, and we've already discussed this in detail, how everything that happened was because Yitzchak should not know the truth so that everything would transpire the way it did. But Yitzchak's idea had been that let Yaakov and Esav work together, similar to a Yisachar Zevulun contract, where one works and one learns. One represents materialism, one represents spirituality, and they complement each other. Rivka knew, because she had the prophecy, that couldn't happen. Esav could not work together with Yaakov. He could work as a subordinate to Yaakov, but he could never be an equal partner with Yaakov. If he would agree to submit himself to be subordinate to Yaakov, then he could be part of the main plan of Hashem. But as long as he doesn't want to be subordinate, he wants to be equal to Yaakov, it's impossible. This is all borne out with the brachos, and now it's 20 years later, and we have had some reconciliation between Yaakov and Esav. Now that they have the reconciliation, Esav now plays his card. And it's not even a devious card. Esav here gets to the root of the matter with this statement in Yud Beis. Let me travel together with you. Let's travel together. We've had reconciliation. Okay? The bracha is yours. The bracha didn't come true. Whatever it is. Let's forget, let bygones be bygones. And now I want to travel together. Let's be partners. And the fact that Torah does not use Esav's name over here in Yud Beis says to me that this was a sincere statement. This was not some way of getting at Yaakov. This was a sincere statement of Esav, let's travel together. This means throughout the ages, throughout the generations, let's forge a partnership together. We will be the expression of the service of God in the world. That's great. The one problem is, he wants to be an equal partner. He doesn't want to be a second. He doesn't want to be submissive to Yaakov. He wants to travel together. Yaakov knows from his mother Rivka that will never happen. It cannot happen. It will not work. And so Yaakov refuses the offer. In Yud Daled, in Yud Gimel, and Yud Daled, he explains how it cannot happen. And finally, when Esav has been rebuffed, then Esav says, okay, but let me leave some men with you. That's an insincere statement. And the Torah uses Esav's name. Vayomer Esav, Atzigan Na'imcha. Now he's Esav again. He's reverted to the Esav. He now has devious ideas over here. And to me it would seem that those ideas are, whether it's to keep an eye on him, whether it's to spy on him, whether it's to infiltrate him, so that his men can cause Yaakov's family to stray away from Hashem, or something along those lines. Any of those things are possibilities. But at this point, Esav reverts back to his being Esav. You could you could view Esav as a little bit of the victim over here, because he does make a sincere statement, but the reason why he's not the victim is because someone who truly wants to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do what they want, they do what Hashem wants. And the Nevuah, the prophecy was that he would, Verav Yavod Tzayir, the older will serve the younger. That was the prophecy. And until Esav is willing to do that, then he cannot be part of the main plan. He cannot be the center stage of history. However, and I know we're over time, give me 2 more minutes. Rashi tells us, if you have to leave, please leave, but just give me 2 more minutes over here if you can. Rashi tells us that when Yaakov says in Pasuk Yud Dalet, let my master follow in front, and I will go slowly, Ad Asher Avo El Adoni Seira, until I come to my master to Seir. Did Yaakov ever go to Seir?
No.
He never went to Seir. Yaakov never in his life went to Seir. Yaakov went to Eretz Yisrael, to Yitzchak, and remained there, and then eventually went down to Egypt, and died in Egypt. He never went to Seir. Was this a lie? Until I come to my master to Seir? Was Yaakov traveling to Seir? So Rashi tells us that what Yaakov meant is that prophecy which we say every day, which is, Yaakov said, V'olu Moshiim Bahar Seir, Bahar Tzion, Lishpot Eshar Esav. V'olu Moshiim Bahar Tzion, Lishpot Eshar Esav. When the Moshiim, the Saviors, go up on Har Tzion to judge Har Esav, then the kingdom will be to Hashem. In the end of days, when Mashiach comes, and finally the Moshiim, the Saviors, will ascend Har Tzion, and they will judge Har Esav, that's when Yaakov will come to Har Seir, because Har Seir will eventually become part of Eretz Yisrael. We will in the future get the Keni, Kenizi, Kadmoni, those three parts, those three nations which we were not given. Avraham Avinu was given 10 nations in the Bris Ben Avasarim. We only got 7. 3 will come in the future. One of those 3 is Esav. At that time, then Yaakov will ascend the Har Seir, and that will be in the future. It is at that time when finally Esav will become part of the larger scheme of Hashem's plan. And at that time, it will be as a subordinate to Yaakov. When it's the Moshiim on Har Tzion will judge Har Esav will be subordinate to Yaakov. At that time, then he will assume his position where he should be in Hashem's great plan. That is the ultimate Geula, that will be the ultimate redemption in the future, which we should see speedily in our days. Mm-hmm.